Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good. That is good.
Yes, but 90% of everything is crud.
You're listening to Sturgeon's Law, the podcast that keeps you up to date on the 10% of everything that isn't crud. Check out the show notes at www.sturgeonslaw.com, and you can find the music used in this show at the Podsafe Music Network and magnatune.com. Now here's your host, Random.
Welcome to Sturgeon's Law. You can call me Random if you like, but since I'm doing the talking right now, it doesn't really matter that much. The show's been on hiatus for a few months, and largely thanks to PodcastReady.com, I figure, there are a ridiculous number more subscribers now than ever, something like 22,000 the last time I looked, so I thought I'd take a moment to explain what this show is all about. To understate the case, I am not a specialist sort of person. My interests are wide and varied, so I don't have a show about any single topic. I talk about whatever strikes my fancy. Books, movies, games, charities, music, whatever. Nor is this a review show, because I don't enjoy writing or talking about things that I don't find interesting or good. Consequently, you might call Sturgeon's Law an advocacy show, in the sense that I advocate that you check out cool stuff. I mean, why wouldn't you want to? And yes, I really do talk this way. At any rate, here we are, not so long after Christmas, and despite having made a long list of future topics recently, I'm jumping over the queue with something that got my attention by way of holiday gifts. We'll get started with that after a quick break.
The work heats up at Kale Cybernetics.
When do you estimate the machine will be complete?
Maybe a couple of months?
See, that's not acceptable.
While Diana puts INSCOM on alert.
What? Did you say Kale?
Yes. Kale Cybernetics.
As in Veronica Kale?
Yes.
She is extremely dangerous. At one point, she managed to capture Dr. Psycho. We cannot underestimate her.
Meanwhile, Cersei and Cheetah are entering the game.
Then help me. And when you've done enough...
Oh, so I can owe you and Ares.
Wait, what? You owe Ares?
The players start drawing closer in issue 36 of Wonder Woman, Champion of Themyscira, premiering January 21st, 2009, only at PendantAudio.com.
So among my Christmas gifts were two trade paperbacks of comics written by Warren Ellis, both of comics I'd read previously, but one had collected in a nice book, and in the process of joking with a friend about how he got DC superhero books and I got these, I realized that the two works in question are pivotal in their own ways, as Ellis works go, and that I should really tell you about them and why you should consider reading them, despite them being, as my friend put it, more full of cusses and bad people. The first book is Transmetropolitan Volume 2, Lust for Life, collecting issues 4 through 12 of the monthly comic, which itself ended in 2002. While my friend's assessment is not wrong, so please don't buy Transmet for your kids, it is probably one of the seminal science fiction works in American comics in all the right ways. Transmetropolitan follows the adventures of journalist Spider Jerusalem, who, while clearly inspired at least in part by gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson, many have also taken as a more than average mouthpiece for the writer, through which he might and does deliver commentary on society as reflected in the futuristic city of the comic known only as The City. Science fiction, in my thinking, comes in two flavors. Speculative ponderings on how new discoveries and technologies might change humanity, and telling stories in unusual environments in such a way as to deliver commentary directed at society as we know it today. The original Star Trek at its best did the latter. The cyberpunk novels of the 80s and 90s did much of the former. Transmetropolitan does both. In one issue of Lust for Life, Spider and his new assistant witness the voluntary transition of a human being's consciousness into a cloud of nanobots, while in another, the establishment of countless new religious sects in the format of a convention serves as both a commentary on religious cults and, I think, a jab at commercial conventions, both things that Ellis is known to have little love for, and indeed, Jerusalem has perhaps one of his angriest and most revealing moments of the series at the end of that issue. Transmetropolitan is not for the squeamish. Not only because the language, art, and concepts can be crude, base, and visceral, but because Ellis rarely holds back when he wants to expose the dirty undersides of human existence. On the other hand, the theme of the series is the discovery and revelation of truth, the one thing Jerusalem, and perhaps Ellis himself, hold sacrosanct, and it is this that is admirable and often edifying and perhaps even uplifting about the series. While its humor is twisted and often gross, its underlying intelligence and passion is gripping, perhaps in this way similar to the works of American underground giants like R. Crumb and Art Spiegelman. The entire 60-issue run has been collected in 10 trade paperback volumes, which are still in print and easily obtained.
Year 2000. But where are the flying cars? I was promised flying cars. I don't see any flying cars. Why? Why? Why?
The other Warren Ellis trade paperback I received was the first collection of Freak Angels. Now, Freak Angels is a ripping good yarn and so forth, but in fact, I don't think that's what sets it apart from, well, other ripping good yarns, I guess. Instead, Freak Angels is perhaps a preview or a proof of concept of at least one possible future for the comics industry. Let me explain. Freak Angels, in short, was never a print comic prior to trade collection, despite it being published by very well-established comics publishers Avatar Press. If you're not familiar with Avatar, well, they're not one of the big dogs in the front of the Diamond Distributor Previews publication like DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, or Image, but they're solidly established nevertheless, with a 12-year history of comics that are, in general, very much not aimed at kids. Not that kids are a significant market of the superhero comics anymore anyway, but perhaps that's a topic for another day. At any rate, what's unusual about Freak Angels is that it is the first major foray that I know of by either Avatar or Ellis himself into webcomics. Now let's be clear. Obviously webcomics are not that new of a thing. Webcomics that make enough money to support the creator have happened in a number of cases, although clearly it's been the merchandise that does much of the supporting, but so what? In a sense, a print collection is just another form of merchandising the webcomic, you know? What is key to webcomics is the availability, obviously both by medium of the internet, and because in general, and in every successful case that I know of, they're free to read online, often including their entire archives. Generally, they are strip-based, more in the form of newspaper comics perhaps, but not always, and indeed, Freak Angels is done in pages specifically to fit the print publication that it has now reached. 6 pages come out each Friday, well, nearly every Friday, on freakangels.com, and you may read them for free, including all pages to date. In the case of Freak Angels, unlike many webcomics, there is no third-party advertising on the site. Indeed, it's a very clean site, and links into the archives are very clearly provided, including thumbnails to each installment in said archives. The only ad I currently see is for the first collection. This is a comic that wants you to read it, and this is why I believe it may be at least one future for the comics industry. The monthly comic does not want you to read it. It costs far too much for the consumer, while making far too little, and for independent comics the number is probably negative, for the publisher, while still managing to be stuffed full of ads, at least in the case of comics that don't lose money. Furthermore, the most mainstream comics are aggressively insular in content, seeming to defy the new reader to follow what's going on. And of course, much has been said and lampooned about whether direct market comic stores are inviting to the new or casual consumer. But the Freak Angels website wants you there. It provides you an RSS feed, so you don't have to remember to check in on Fridays. Netheads can embed an RSS widget of the comic. You can use the Freak Angels wallpaper on your desktops. You wear the t-shirt. And yes, I do wear the t-shirt myself. This comic wants you to come and love it, no strings attached. And once you do love it, you'll want the printed collection because it is a thing of beauty. There are no extra pages. Every single page is one page of the comic as first seen on the website, except in jaw-dropping quality because it is, after all, print, not lossy JPEG being squished into your display. The colors are gorgeous. You don't have to click every 6 pages and wait. You can experience 144 pages of what is truly a really fine story about flooded London and a dozen young adults who were born simultaneously with terrifying mental powers, all at one sitting in your most comfortable chair. There is literally no reason, if you are hearing this, that you should not check out Freak Angels. If it's not for you, then you are out nothing but the few moments it took for you to look and discover that. If it is for you, then I encourage you to support this model. Avatar isn't forcing you to pay them a cent to read it, and if you're anything like me, that will just make you more inclined to give them some money for a quality product, instead of being shaken down for $4 for a rubbish comic in a dark store by a man complaining at you that it's not a library, so you'll wind up buying without having a clue what's inside. There's got to be a better way, and I think Warren Ellis and Avatar have put their finger on one such way. Again, they're not the first, but if there's one theme that runs regularly through my podcasting, it's the obvious one of new media. And when the professionals find a way to make it happen like this, I think the movement gets another much-needed champion. So welcome to them both, and to the rest of you, have a look and see if you like. And don't forget to check out their store, because how many comics offer to sell you a logo woven throw, after all?
Is there no one on this planet to even challenge me?
I won't swear that I'll do this every episode, but I'd like to get back to an old Sturgeon's Law tradition of offering you up some pod-safe music that perhaps you haven't heard before, because once again, that's just what I'm here for. I spent a couple of months or so last year hosting the Podsafe Music Countdown podcast, and that got me a chance myself to hear some more such music, and I hope to get back into following what's going on at Magnatune as well, who've got some very interesting new monetary models, and I don't doubt that I'll talk to you about that soon. In the meantime, though, let's call this episode otherwise done, and I'll remind you to check out the website at www.sturgeonslaw.com. Feel free to email me at sturgeonslaw@gmail.com, and if you want to give a voice comment, you can either mail me an MP3 at Gmail or call my Grand Central voicemail at 405-3344-311. Thanks for listening, and hey, pass the word that we're back in town, yeah? All right, taking us out then, from their album A Perfect Day for Banana Fish and from the Podsafe Music Network, this is The Fire Apes with Tuesday's Fine.